The next case is 07873, Donald Howard versus Miami Township Fire Division. Ms. Frick.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Dawn Frick. I represent Miami Township Fire Division and Miami Township in this matter. I respectfully reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there on the clock.
We're here to address two issues related to the Ohio Political Subdivisions Immunity Act, and specifically the exception to immunity set forth in 2744.02b3. And that exception to immunity says that a political subdivision is liable for injury, death, or loss to person or property caused by their negligent failure to keep public roads in repair and other negligent failure to remove obstructions from public roads. The dispute in this case is over the definition of the word obstruction. We're asking this court to reverse the Second District Court of Appeals and to reinstate the decision of the trial court, which used the ordinary, plain, and most common meaning of the word obstruction, that which is an obstacle or something that blocks or closes up the roadway by obstacle. In this particular case, the Second District, in fact, changed that and interpreted the definition of the word obstruction to mean any object placed or erected in a public roadway that has the potential of interfering with the public's use of that roadway. Now, in addition, we're also asking the court to find that the duty of a political subdivision to remove an obstruction only extends to those objects which block or close off the roadway for usual and ordinary travel.
Ms. Frick, I'm interested when you say you're emphasizing the word object, and we're talking here about water, are we not?
In this particular case, Your Honor, we're talking about ice and slush, and in fact, the Court of Appeals went so far as to say ice and water residue was an obstruction. But when you look at it in the grand picture or the larger picture, their definition was so expansive, it's in fact was any object placed or erected in a public roadway that has the potential of interfering with the public's use. I would argue to this court that if in fact the court adopted the Second District Court of Appeals definition of obstruction, then in fact it's at least a question then whether water that ran off from a controlled burn, as in this case, is something that's placed or erected in a roadway. But again, when you're looking at that definition in the context of statutory interpretation, you have to look at the plain language that's utilized in the statute itself. And if that's clear and unambiguous, there's no reason to go any further in the interpretative process. And in fact, that's what the Second District Court of Appeals did.
Let's forget about erected and so forth, because that's not in the statute. You're correct that the Court of Appeals added something that to a test that's not in the statute. I'm more concerned about the General Assembly removed the word nuisance and added the word obstruction without defining it, so we have no idea what the General Assembly meant by it. So don't we then go to either we say, well, they deleted the word nuisance, they must have meant something by changing to the word obstruction, but then if we go to dictionaries, we have definitions that seem to cover this issue where there's snow and ice build up, apparently a mix of slush and ice on a curb, hinder from passage, action or operation, impede, cut off from sight doesn't work, but that's Merriam's dictionary, and then the American Heritage is impede, retard, or interfere with, hinder. Don't those words apply if we just do as we sometimes do when the General Assembly hasn't defined words for us, we go to the dictionary? And it seems to me that if you look at least at these two dictionary definitions, they would cover the accumulation of ice and snow. And then the question is, was the township negligent in not removing it? And that's a factual issue, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor. And answer your first question, I think both sides have provided you a number of definitions from a number of different sources, dictionaries as well as others. But I think what you'll find consistent in each and every one of those definitions is the primary definition, which is the most common usage of the word, is to block or close up by passage. So in looking at that, I think that's the most common usage and therefore is also the same usage that would put a public subdivision on notice of what, in fact, it was required to do.
Counsel, let's change the facts a little. If the fire trucks, when they left the scene, you know, all this water out there at this burn site caused mud. And so they pull out on the road and they leave big clods of mud on the road. Is that an obstruction?
Your Honor, under the definition that we propose, if they are big clots of mud that physically block the road, I would say yes.
No, I'm suggesting the normal, you know, you've seen people pull out of the mud and what they leave on the road, it's not big clods. Under your definition, it wouldn't be, but it surely would leave the road slippery and dangerous in some respects.
Well, I think under the definition we propose, it would be an obstacle or something that might block passage. If it's in fact a clot, it's similar to a pile of rocks that might be left in a construction.
No, I'm not suggesting. I'm just suggesting. They pull out, they've got mud in their cleats, they speed up, and the mud all lays down on the highway, and now the highway is slippery because there's a coating, a thin coating of mud out there.
I think, Your Honor, your question kind of raises the issue of the problem here, is a political subdivision without a clear definition is kind of left with this question of what, in fact,
you would agree anybody else that did that could be. If an accident happened and it was their mud that got on the road, they could be in trouble legally.
I think it would depend on the circumstances, but I think, again, it would depend on if we're talking about blocks of mud.
And you're suggesting a political subdivision ought to be in less trouble than anybody else.
No, Your Honor, but I think that the purpose behind political subdivision immunity is to limit the liability of political subdivisions, and the whole public policy behind that is responsive to your question, is we're trying to limit the liability of political subdivisions as a whole, and as such that should be construed narrowly. If we take the definition that's put in by the Second District or proposed by Appellees here, we're simply taking the same definition that was employed by the courts over the course of years prior to this under the former statute of nuisance. And the court specifically removed the words nuisance and put in an obstruction and failure to remove an obstruction and negligent failure to remove an obstruction.
So, counsel, do you think negligence is a more what was the term instead of they took out?
They took out open, in repair, and free from nuisance.
Nuisance, not negligence. I'm sorry, nuisance. Is nuisance a more encompassing term than obstruction?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that it is.
So obstruction is a more discreet intent there for something to be deposited on the road.
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, I think that this particular court in Hart v. Cleveland invited the legislature to make that more limiting language. And in what you did in that particular case, when the court was considering whether a tree limb overhanging above the road was a nuisance, and in examining that, the court looked at whether it actually physically obstructed the roadway or not. And the court specifically said, contrary to the holdings below, 2744.02b3 contains no language that limits a political subdivision's duty to the removal of obstructions from public roads. And so you held that tree limb overhanging was a nuisance. And so by saying that, you essentially invited the legislature to go back and change what they had originally changed back under House Bill 350, but was overturned as a result of the Sheward case, and put in to remove negligent failure to remove an obstruction from the road. In addition to that, at the same time, the legislature also amended Revised Code 723.01, and that statute involves a municipality's duty to maintain its roads. And in that section, the court also removed the language free from nuisance. And it's our position that the court or that legislature understood what it was doing when it did that and understood the prior precedents of this court and other courts.
Counsel, I think you would probably agree that the legislature wasn't thinking about this kind of event, either with the earlier version of the statute or this version. They were principally thinking, I would assume, about the duty of the county or the city highway department to keep the roads well maintained and to keep tree branches from overhanging and obstructing a stop sign or whatever it might be, guardrail in the wrong place. And they even have manuals that control some of this. That's, I would think, what the standard that they were creating was looking at, and here you have a case where another governmental body caused something accidentally to end up on the roadway. It isn't a case. Your client wasn't responsible for maintaining the street otherwise, other than they did something that caused water to get out onto the roadway and caused slush.
Well, I would agree, Your Honor. I think it's probably the legislature would have a difficult time anticipating each and every way that the statute could be applied. But I think it's important in determining whether we take the definition that's put in the second district. I think that was far broader, clearly, than what the legislature intended, and, in fact, leaves the possibilities even more infinitely broad. And, in fact, any provision for immunity should be construed narrowly. And by taking the word obstruction and using it in its ordinary common way, and, in fact, looking at the way obstruction has been used in other statutes, other similar statutes, it's easier to glean what the legislature intended, and that was to only have a political subdivision liable for those things that physically block the passage or cause an obstacle in the roadway.
Could I ask you, Ms. Frick, if during the controlled burn clouds of smoke were generated drifting on the roadway, would that be an obstruction in your view?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it would. And, in fact, in a similar case in the Second District, the Second District Court, in fact, under the former statute, found that that wasn't even a nuisance under the old interpretation. So I think clearly in a more strict, and that was in the Sherwin-Williams case, I think in a more strict construction of the statute, that, in fact, it wouldn't be an obstruction.
Something that obstructs view is not an obstruction in your position would be, even though view was obstructed, since passage was not, it is not an obstruction under the statute?
I think that's what the legislature said when they said it was a failure to remove an obstruction. Yes, Your Honor. And I see that I've reached my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Frick. Mr. Ignazi.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honor, I represent Don Howard, the father of Chris Howard, who died as a result of this incident. Basically, what this case comes down to in the legal issues is the two different versions of the statute and the words used in the interpretation of those statutes. First, I would like to address one of the questions earlier as to whether or not smoke would be an obstruction or a nuisance. I think the question was nuisance. This court decided the case of Sherwin-Williams in December of 2006. That's only 14 months ago. In that case, that was the specific issue. It was smoke. And I know that well because I tried the case with 16 lawyers last week, and we finished Friday night. In that case, the village of Lewisburg created smoke on their grounds, and then it swayed, according to all the firefighters, about 2,000 feet down to I-70 in the year 2000. That's why we were dealing with the old statute, the free from nuisance language. And in that case, in which this court considered de novo the summary judgment and the immunity issues on behalf of the political subdivision, determined that a political subdivision may be liable for injury or death or anything caused by the nuisance. And the nuisance was smoke. And that's under 2744.02b3, which we're dealing with the same section now, but this is the 2003 version.
What do you believe is the significance of the legislative change? What did they take out when they took out nuisance? Because they obviously wanted to make a change. So we have to understand what that significance of that change was. What is your version of that?
Well, Your Honor, that was my question, and that's why I read several times the old version and also the 2003 version, and with particular attention to B3. And I really couldn't see where they were intending to change much in there. It was rewritten. They only changed a few of those phrases. Now, the rewrite in 2003 covered a lot of other different sections and made a lot of other changes.
But they took out nuisance. Does that mean anything in your opinion?
I couldn't see it when I read both statutes both ways and I did the research. I can't see, just for this particular section, 2744.02b3, that the free from nuisance and negligence and failing to remove obstructions, I couldn't see any reason or difference.
Okay. If we accept your version of ice and water being an object, then that would then apply to all of the snow removal that is happening in Ohio, correct?
No, I don't think so, because that would go to, I think it's 2744.02a, 3 and 5 in terms of the discretion. And if we have, and we all know we've had plenty of ice and snow lately, if we have doing ice or snow removal or things like that, that's a discretionary function. That's not an issue in this case.
Why wouldn't it, when the snowplow came through and shifted the snow from point A to B and it turned into slush and was moved around, so it's no longer a natural accumulation, why then does not your version of the statute apply?
Because going back to this court's cases many years ago, including most recently 14 months ago, the Sherwin-Williams case, it all comes down to the focus that this court has had on the main issue behind the old version and the version we're considering today, and that is whether the condition existed within the subdivision's control that created the danger on the regularly portioned of the roadway. Here we have possession and control. We have a burn in which the fire department had almost 10,000 gallons of water at a house that had burned that was higher elevated than the road, and for 6 hours in near freezing, it was 12 degrees when this happened, and with a wind chill factor that was close to zero. And the fire department's out there throwing 10,000 gallons and letting it cool on.
But I'm having a trouble understanding what is the significance. I mean, if you plow a street, the part that's plowed is a discretionary act. I can understand that's not covered, just like actually putting water on the house probably is a discretionary act under the immunity class statutes. But then the act of letting something as a result of your discretionary act accumulate somewhere else, the snow and slush on a parking spot or the entrance to other driveways or other parts of the berm, because you're only opening one lane and you got the other part. How is that significantly different than the water coming from their discretionary act onto the road versus a snow plow that puts the slush on the other side of the road and now it becomes a hazard to a person traveling?
Your Honor, I believe that deals more with, and I believe there's probably immunity for that from the political subdivision. That deals with the discretionary function. In this case, well, first of all, that's not at issue, but in this case, there was none. Deputy Fire Chief Queen, who was in charge of the matter, testified that he had all of the involvement. There was no consideration of salt trucks. They didn't consider that at all, so there's no exercise of any discretion here. We have a 55-mile-an-hour rural road with no ice and no snow anywhere except on this S-curve at 9:50 p.m. at night when it's close to 0 degrees with the wind chill factor. It's a totally different situation.
Counsel, I've been sitting here thinking more about this case as it's argued and trying to sort out in my mind the differences, and I want to test this with you. I think I've finally come to the conclusion. and I'm going to give you two or three different fact patterns, that the difference is if you get past this immunity question, you still have to prove negligence.
Absolutely.
Right. Because what I was thinking about is this roadway. Let's say nothing happened out there except a rainfall on a winter day. And because of bad ditches or insufficient ditches or whatever, water at this curve runs out on the roadway and freezes and causes slush. We might not think that the local, whoever's road it is, should be responsible if that occurs once or twice. If it becomes notorious, if it's just known to them or should be known to them through a normal inspection that this darn curve, every time it rains or every time we get a snowfall, water forms and it drifts out on the roadway here. At that point, if an accident happens, that might be different than if it's the first or second time. Would you agree with that? But that gets sorted out through the question of negligence rather than through the question of immunity.
Right. And I believe that goes to the possession, the control. Certainly, like in the Sherwin-Williams case, this court determined that smoke can be a nuisance that was blown by the wind.
I'm familiar with country roadways where they have signs posted, and whenever it rains a lot, somebody from the county comes out and flips the sign and says high water because, you know, it just happens. It's close to a river or what have you.
I think that goes to whether or not there was the negligence issue.
So that's how they get sorted out rather than the immunity issue. Because here it's slush on a roadway that came from an act independent of the highway department.
Right. Yeah. This case had nothing to do with the weather or anything else. There was only snow. There was only ice and slush there because they put 10,000 gallons on this house and it came across the road in near 0 degree weather.
Could I just direct your attention back to the difference with the nuisance versus obstruction in the General Assembly's Act in replacing nuisance with obstruction? What did that do to the statute in your view?
In my view, I don't believe that it changed much at all. If the legislature did intend to restrict it further or have any different meaning to it, it would have defined the word obstruction. And it didn't. The word obstruction means to impair, impede, interfere by means of whatever it is. In this case, it's ice, so it is a physical substance. But I mean, whether it's a bobcat that's lying on the roadway in the dark with no lights, or whether it's ice or whatever the obstruction is, whether it's a hole in the ground, it's not something that you have to see per se as you're driving down the road.
So do you think nuisance and obstruction, it sounds to me you think they're interchangeable?
I think the free from nuisance and the failure to remove obstructions are essentially the same. And especially when reading this version of the statute, when you look at obstruction and what it means and you look at the definition in the dictionary, I think the Court of Appeals was correct in their assessment of the interpretation of it. I don't think they added anything.
Well, opposing counsel, when asked the same question, believes that nuisance is a more encompassing term than obstruction. Would you disagree with that statement?
I would disagree with that statement.
You think they're interchangeable?
I think they're essentially the same. I've read both of them, and I can't really see that the legislature intended any significant difference between the two phrases in the old version versus the new version.
Then why would it have hit a change of statute, I wonder?
It rewrote the entire statute and made a number of other changes unrelated to these.
Of course, we've used obstruction sometimes to define nuisance, haven't we? Tree limb. I think you'll find the word obstruction or obstructs in some of our opinions where there is something that some physical object that is in the way of the roadway, easy passage, and so we use that to help define nuisance. That's obviously a nuisance.
Right.
What is your response to counsel for the township's argument that we should adopt the first definition, the first meaning under in the dictionary definitions, which is certainly more restrictive, to block or close up by an obstacle or to block or fill with obstacles. The meanings that you have cited to us, understandably, are different. Should we adopt the first? Why should we not adopt the first meaning in the definitional statute?
Well, in terms of the interpretation of the statute and the word obstruction as used in the statute, I think we should use the meaning that is plain, that is ordinary. And when you look at that, you look at the definitions in the dictionary, and obviously that would include a bobcat on the road in the dark. That would include a hole in the ground. That's something that you can't see. For example, a hole in the ground, that's not an object that would close or necessarily block the road physically. But I think a hole in the road that's 10 foot by 10 foot or whatever the size would be, that would be an obstruction. Anything that would impede or interfere in the safe passage of people on the public highways.
But this didn't.
Let me just. She's arguing, I think, that we don't look at the other meanings, like such as impede, and the secondary and third meanings of the definition. That we look at the first meaning, which is to block or close up or. That are not. This road certainly was not blocked or closed, right? Do we agree?
No, correct. Okay.
And so she's saying if you apply the first meanings in the definition of the word in the dictionaries, that's what we should do, and that then omits applying the words such as impede or retard or interfere with.
I don't think you can pick and choose. If the legislature had some intent on doing that, it would have defined the term within the statute. I don't think you can pick and choose. Obstruction, as used by the Attorney General in the opinions, the Court of Appeals went through that.
We can't pick and choose because you think the General Assembly could have intended all the meetings, or
because the definition of
can't pick and choose. So I'm trying to find out why we shouldn't, or why we should or should not. And I guess your argument would be make it for you because it's one I'm thinking this through, that we don't know what the General Assembly intended by obstruction. So they by implication forced us to go to a dictionary definition, which we assume it knows, the General Assembly knows, that's what we do. And so we don't know whether the General Assembly wanted us to select just the first meaning or all the meanings under the word. That would be the argument I just made for you, it seems to me.
Correct, Your Honor.
I'd like to explore a little bit more your definition of instruction as well, obstruction as well. In this particular case, it seemed to me in reading it there appeared to be some dispute as to whether or not there is actually ice there, but there was no dispute that there was some, that the roadway was wet, not that there was a gush of water going across, but that it was wet. In your view, is a wet roadway an obstruction?
Just a wet roadway? I wouldn't think so.
So we're really talking about the ice in this case.
Correct.
If there was ice.
Quite interestingly, all the deposition testimony in the record from the firefighters indicated they said it was wet. We don't believe we saw any ice. Now, all the patrol officers and everybody else, including their own accident reconstruction expert who was on the scene within an hour, said there's ice. So we have the issues of fact there.
Right. So there's a factual issue, and then this is, I believe, a summary judgment, so we have to look at it in the light most favorable to your client. So we would have to assume that there's ice on it.
Correct. And we do have testimony, and we do have an expert that's opined that as well. And I believe even the defense expert opined there was ice, too.
And in your view, it doesn't matter how much ice, that it, has to be quarter of an inch thick, a half an inch thick, or just ice crystals?
Well, I think the ice would have to be a condition that directly jeopardized the safety of traffic on the highway, consistent with this court's interpretation of things on the highway over the years.
Thank you, Mr. Ignazi.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Frick, you've saved a little more than a minute and a half.
Your
Your Honors, if I may, I'd like to address a couple of the points that were brought up. I think in particular, Justice Stratton, I think that you pointed out part of the problems with using such an expansive definition of obstruction, and this weekend would be a perfect example if, in fact, under the definition that's proposed by the Second District and the plaintiff, and, in fact, the definition which is akin to nuisance, the snow that was plowed to the side and eventually melted and maybe even refroze would be an obstruction under the definition, and I think that opens up far too much liability and far too much potential problems and ambiguity.
Well, but let's be serious, and I don't want to discourage anyone from filing an action against the City of Columbus, certainly, but when you have a historic snowfall and where do you put the snow? I mean, of course you put snow on the side of the road. Everybody does that. So it's a question of negligence, is it not? And it would be very difficult, it seems to me, to prove a case of negligence against a city that plows snow and puts it someplace until they can bring their trucks out and haul it away. That's a common practice in every city that has snowfall. So I think that's sort of a red herring in this case, frankly.
But look at the negligence issue.
That's not our issue. But
in fact, in order to get to the nuisance, you have to get to what is an obstruction. And in this particular case, you can't ignore the fact of what is an obstruction. And in fact, in response to the questions by several councils, what was the purpose behind the legislature in removing the word nuisance and placing the word obstruction? I think it's particularly important to look at the definition of nuisance is the definition which they're employing and which the Second District employed. The legislature didn't change that for no reason at all, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Frick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise. You may be seated.